Sorry about that little break in there. I had to take a drink of water real quick here. So now we're going to talk about challenging attributions, because this is closely tied to the thought errors. A lot of times we ascribe things to our partner that may or may not be correct. Things like, this situation happened because of blank. We also tend to make judgments about someone else's personality that may or may not be correct. And so let's look at some examples here about attributions. My spouse and I had planned to have a romantic evening together. Now he or she is 45 minutes late getting here, and I have not even gotten a phone call yet. I am sure my spouse is up to no good. I knew I was not the priority. This sounds a lot like the example we just looked at a little bit ago here. So, again, I knew I'm not the priority. There's an attribution there. I believe that my spouse doesn't care about making me a priority. I haven't gotten a phone call, so that must mean A, B, and C. And so when we, when we teach our clients cognitive debating strategies, we're teaching them things like, is this a fact or is this just an opinion? Is it a fact that your partner definitely did not want to even try and give you a phone call? We don't know that yet. We haven't talked with the partner. We don't know if that's true. Probably not. Is there any other way I can explain the situation that's less negative? Well, maybe the phone died and there was nowhere to charge it. Maybe for the romantic evening they were wanting to stop somewhere and get a gift or get chocolates or get something, flowers or something to give you to make the evening even more romantic. Maybe they did have something that made them late. Maybe they had to go over at work. Maybe there was an accident they couldn't control. But the thing we want to target in terms of attributions on this example is the one, I am sure he or she is up to no good. That's a negative prediction there that's looking at the worst. If things don't go the way that they're supposed to go, I assume the worst. So that's a negative attribution there. And that's something you may want to look at. We might even want to do some individual work with the person who's saying that, because there may be some stories that they have underlying. I believe that my spouse is up to no good. Some suspicions that they have. Those are worth taking a look at. Because even if the spouse is doing something good, they're going to negate it if they have that thought attribution. What about this next one? My spouse can't stand to be around me. As soon as the spouse gets home, it's time to hop on the computer. Video games and internet are all he or she cares about. Now, I actually had a couple years ago I worked with where this was the case. He worked a tough factory job and physically was drained. Just didn't want to dive right into stuff at home when he got home. He changed his clothes and showered and hopped on the video games. But his wife was concerned because there was hardly any time with her, and they did have a child too, and she wanted more family time. So one of the things we looked at is the assumption of he'd rather spend time with the video games than with me. And the fact is, in most cases, that's not true. For him, he actually explained when she asked him that the situation was that he was coming from a physically demanding job and didn't want to do any more physical tasks around the home, just wanted to do something, quote-unquote, mindless, is the way he put it. He said, if I'm doing video games, I don't have to think and concentrate. It's totally different from what I do during the day on my job. So we ended up coming up with a plan where he had enough of a break to do the video games or something else to de-escalate when he got home, but also had time for her and time for the child. It also gave the wife a chance to explain when we went back and forth with taking turns with listening and paraphrasing that she too needs a different kind of break than he needs. That she's been spending all day doing things at the house, all day taking care of their very young child, and needed a break with that. So in one way they were able to empathize with each other's frustration that they need a break after so many hours of doing the same kind of task. They were able to learn about the importance of changing tasks to something else and empathize with each other. Let's look at this next example. My husband sees the laundry on the stairs and walks right over it. I know he thinks it's all my job. He doesn't want to help me with anything. He's so lazy and stubborn. So, of course, this person, seeing that the laundry hasn't moved, and she's making assumptions. One of the no-nos we just talked about is avoiding personality descriptions, especially the negative. He's lazy and stubborn. So, if she would say that to him, of course he's going to get defensive. He's going to talk about how he's not lazy, what he's all done, how he tried to help, or what he's tried to do in the past. And it's just going to escalate the argument. If there's a task that she wants him to do, for example, the laundry, and she has a way to do it, she may need to say directly, "Would you be willing to help with the laundry? I've seen the same laundry sitting on the stairs a while, and I'm not sure what we can do to get it done." In this case, this actually came out of a real example that I dealt with a couple. She was very angry. She said he, quote, never helps with stuff around the house. And he actually was recalling a time where he ended up unnecessarily, like, shrinking her clothes. He didn't intend to do it, but she was very angry because he didn't put something on the right setting. And he didn't want to get accused again of doing the wrong thing. So he said, "You know what, I'm not sure how to do this, so I'm not going to do it until I've received specific instructions." So he really had innocent motives there, but she just thought he wasn't even trying to help around the house. So that's where it's important to facilitate with our couples, them checking in with each other. Let's look at the fifth example here. My wife can answer the phone to talk to her girlfriends about the gossip. She can keep up with the latest episodes of the nighttime drama to the point she won't even turn the stupid TV off to hear what I have to say. She doesn't even make any effort to listen to me. She could care less what I think or feel about anything. It's her way. Her way is all that matters. So one of the things I would use is maybe Munoz's outline about feeling vulnerable. Sounds like this partner feels like his wife isn't making an effort to listen to him. So with that, we would use those blanks about what feels vulnerable. Spending time together is important to me, and I feel like I'm not sure how to get your attention for us to hopefully spend more time together. I'm wondering how he can do that. What I tell myself when I see this is that you'd rather be watching your shows, going out with your girlfriends, and doing other things than spending time with me, and I'm not sure how to approach you. I fear that we might be pulling apart, and I want to find a way to get your attention and for us to spend quality couple time. You hear how that's a gentle approach? It's fairly easy to listen to, and it works on solving the problem. Let's turn to another example or issue here that we could use with clients. My goal today, as you can see, is trying to really load you up with a lot of different types of tools that you can use when you're working with clients. So another exercise is called your marital ATM. So when we think of an ATM, at a bank, we think about what money or deposits we're putting in and what things are coming out. So in every relationship, it feels like there's some things that are adding to the relationship, that are making people feel closer, And there's some things that are making them feel like they're distancing or they're farther apart. So what we would do is have each person in the relationship write down things that they feel are credits, are adding to the marital quote-unquote account. Things like doing things around the house without complaining. Things like complimenting, things like attending to the other one and listening. And then they're going to also list 5 debits. Things that they feel take from the relationship. So this exercise is going to help the other one notice what types of behaviors help or hinder their closeness. And again, when we're talking, like I said at the beginning of today's seminar, about the topic of intimacy, you'd be surprised that it's very rarely just about the physical intimacy. It's about, I don't feel close to you because this and this behavior. I feel like you're pulling away. These things add to my love bank, as some people have termed it, and these things take away. Another exercise I've done with couples is basically having them list the roles, the tasks, the things that they each are basically assigned to do, and then to decide what's the worth or value of them. How I came up with this exercise was I had a couple where he was complaining that he felt she did the, quote, easy tasks around the house, and that he just expected her to do the tough things. Things like maintenance on the car, things like the lawn, things like lifting things or building things. So he's like, wow, you only have to do A, B, and C. And she's like, well, those are things that I do every day. Taking care of the kids is a daily thing. Cleaning the house is a daily thing. The meals are a daily thing. She's like, it's consistent. So for her, she rated those on a 1 to 10 scale as 9 or 10 because she felt these tasks don't go away. They're things I always have to do. They're constant and they're draining. Now for him, he minimized the value of the tasks that she had and felt like the tasks he does are more physical. They're more labor intensive. He was like, well, when I got to build something else around the house or I have to fix the car or do something in the yard, that's very physically draining. Even though those things might not be all the time, they're physically things that take a toll on me. So they're of high worth or value. So it's important to talk about who does what tasks. Are there assumptions about roles? Are there assumptions about who does what? Is it okay for the other partner to pick up a task that traditionally might be done by the other one? What meanings do they have assigned to doing certain tasks? And facilitating that discussion. Because until we actually made that an out loud discussion in our session, the couple never realized why the tasks were so draining to each other and what assumptions each other had. And it helped the gentleman to realize that, wow, his wife does do these tasks consistently every day. And that's super draining. And then she realized, well, he might not do all his tasks consistently, but yeah, that is physically demanding. So rather than demeaning the amount of value of their task, they were able to hear each other's rationale and look at that. This ties in really well with the 2006 article on communication concerns by Orenthal and Van Steenwagen. They talk about how in relationships, there's usually a sense of who owns a task and then who's allowed to do a task. They give an example about an anniversary of a couple coming up, and the wife is concerned that because the husband has to spend extra time at work, that they may not get to have their traditional anniversary outing with each other. So she goes ahead and she takes care of mowing the lawn, which is usually his task. He comes back, and instead of being happy about the lawn being mowed and not having to do it, he ends up quite upset. So one of the things that this example highlights, according to the authors, is that there's an assumption on his part that he owns the task of mowing the lawn, that he wants it done a certain way. He was frustrated because his wife didn't make the lines in the grass the right way, that they didn't overlap, they didn't go the way that they usually do when he does it. One of the useful questions that they suggest is to bring up, what can I do to ask you to assist me or to change your task on such and such day? So this might have been a better approach for the wife to actually bring that up regarding the anniversary. I understand that each year we usually have an anniversary dinner, and I'm concerned that we may not get to have that opportunity this year. I know that you're wanting to get to the lawn, and usually you do that on this day of the week, but I'm wondering if there's another way we can get that done. Would it be okay if I scheduled the neighbor boy to help with the lawn? Would it be okay if I did it myself? That way it respects that the other person usually does that task, but looks at who usurps the task, who's in charge of the task. It's interesting because, again, we oftentimes don't think of these things, but we can end up lessening the likelihood that there's going to be an actual fight. We also find that in terms of communication concerns, that oftentimes in a relationship, each person in the couple is at another end of the continuum in terms of personal space versus intrusion. Just look at when there's a conflict. Oftentimes one person wants to dive right in and keep talking and talking and talking and solve it right now. The other person might say, no, we need distance. We need to pause. This is too intense. Look at communication. Sometimes you have one person who's like, tell me everything about your day. You never talk to me. You don't tell me all the details of your day. And the other person's like, well, I don't need to tell you everything. I'm trying to pick out the most important things that affect both of us. You might see differences of opinions about roles. You might see differences of opinion about privacy, how private they are or not. So that's why it's important to discuss these things. You can see in the PowerPoint I've listed some examples of roles. It's worth it to actually proactively talk about these things. What are the expectations that each person in the marriage or relationship has about roles? So I've listed some examples here. The adventurer. Is there one person that tends to be more the one that sort of plans the outings and thinks about what we're going to do for fun? The financial advisor. What's our plan about who does the bills, who does the taxes? The homebody. The instigator. The justice enforcer. Is there someone who's more the manager? The nurturer. The organizer. The peacekeeper. The pleaser. The problem solver. The provider, or the social organizer. You see, when you list them that way, it's like, wow, there really are a lot of different roles going on. And a lot of times you don't just directly talk about it. But it's important to create a dialogue about that if there's going to be assumptions about who does what. And along with looking at roles, another discussion that's useful is looking at tasks. Who does what? Who arranges appointments? Who does the bill paying? Who takes care of booking travel or car maintenance? Who takes care of getting the children where they need to go? What about cleaning or dusting around the house? Who does grocery shopping? Maintenance? Teacher conferences? Making dinners? Tidying around the house? Trash? Recycling? And again, like I said, looking at the value of each task. Again, this isn't that each person would agree on the value, but it would help them discuss the perception they have. Oh, this task takes more time, so I'm going to rate it a higher value. Oh, this task is repetitive and boring, so I'm going to rate that a higher value. So discussing about it. Now we're going to look at the I messages, which I talked about as an important foundation for the success of couples. The I message essentially has three parts. The first part is the person just talking about his or her feelings from their own perspective. So instead of blaming, you made me feel A, B, and C, we're just saying, I feel such and such. Second part, we're describing the situation as that person sees it. So, when such and such happened, I felt blah, blah, blah. And the last part is describing the desired behavior in the future. Now, first of all, when I teach these I messages to couples, we use them to highlight and affirm the positive. Affirming the positive and continuing what's going right usually is the best way to build up the desired behaviors with the couple. It's a little easier than going to the problems and then trying to patch those up. So, for example, if one person in the couple is wanting more teamwork and togetherness, they could say an I message like, I feel close and as if we're more of a team when we make time for our weekly date night. And in the future, I'm really wanting us, even as busy as we've been lately, to try and make that date night a priority. And then they'll continue with, is this something that you think that we're able to do? Are you willing to see about really protecting that date night and trying to do other things other days, or even sometimes letting things go so that we can make the date night a priority? You see how that's a lot easier to hear rather than, I feel abandoned and neglected because we don't have our date night and I want us to sometimes spend time together. So if we can look at a time when the behavior has happened and highlight that and what it would look like to continue, it's a lot more affirming and easier to go at. Helping clients understand their feelings in terms of the I message may be a useful exercise. For example, they can write down their feelings, like when they're sad, happy, angry, or anxious. Write down how their body feels. For example, when I'm sad, I feel tense, drained, tired, exhausted, bored, and discouraged. And then their behaviors. I start to frown, my muscles hurt, I'm tearful, I isolate, and I feel like I just don't care about anything. Sometimes evaluating what understanding the feelings is like helps give our partner some specifics about what are the triggers for us. So when we use I messages, what's positive about them is that there's no blame. We're just helping understand each person's point of view. We're focusing on their perception of things and solutions. And each person is taking responsibility for his or her part. So what I'd like to do is see if we could work on changing some you messages to I messages. So what I'm going to start with is giving an example of a you message, a message that can come across as accusatory. And then we're going to see how we could change it to an I message. You never let me share my opinions. You always do things your way. That's all that matters. So you hear in this that the always and the nevers, the blaming, the absolute, you always do things. So that would definitely create some defensiveness. I message. I might think of times where I was included and say, I feel more included and like we're a team when we both are able to share our opinions on something. In the future, it's helpful for me not just to hear how things are affecting you, but to be able to add some input because then I feel both of us are being heard. You see how gentle that is? And I know for me, even teaching I messages for years, It creates a pause. It slows me down to have to put things in an iMessage format because it's not the natural way that we think of responding, especially when we're frustrated. Let's look at another example here. I'm sure you think I just wasted my day sitting on my hind end doing nothing. You see a lot of assumptions and negative thought patterns in that one. Instead, I'm feeling maybe undervalued. I'm worried about what I think your perceptions might be about this day. I'm concerned because I've spent a great deal of time working on things around the house, and I'm not sure that you're aware of all I've done. In the future, it would be helpful to me for us to talk about our day so that I could share with you about what I've all done, and I could also hear what you've all done. You see how my speech slowed down even when I said that, because I was thinking of the best way to say things. What about this last one? You need to control your emotions. You're too out of hand. So first of all, looking at someone else's behavior isn't always useful. We want to make sure we're saying this in terms of ourself and how things are affecting us. I feel encouraged about our communication when we're able to talk calmly and hear each other out. I'm wondering when we get to the point where either or both of us are upset, how we can get back to that calm place. Do you have any ideas? Let's look at some more examples here of changing you messages to iMessages. We will never be able to get this done after what you did. Obviously, you hear how flaming that is. I'm worried that we're having a hard time finishing this task. It's taking us longer than I thought. For some reason, I thought it would only take an hour, and right now it's 3 hours later, so I'm wondering what plan we're going to do to get this task finished, or what you think from here. Because, you know, the other partner might even think, you know what, we're having a hard time, let's take a break. Let's come back to this task with a fresh mind. Let's look at the next example. I thought we were supposed to be a team, but apparently not according to you. You hear the accusation in that one. So being a team is a desired behavior. So that's the one I definitely would make sure and include in the iMessage. I feel closer to you. I feel like we're more of a team when we talk over our plans for the week and have some time to be together in spite of our busyness. Let's look at this last example. I'll never be your priority. All your buddies will always be more important to you than I will be. So that could be changed to, our couple time is really important to me. I feel neglected when we make time for outings with other people and don't get our couple time each week. In the future, I'm wondering how we can still have some relationship with our friends, but maintain our couple time. So what we're trying to do is hear several parts of what the other person's sharing. When we're listening to the person who's speaking, there's four areas we're looking at so we can really do some perspective taking. We're looking at their experience. What do they say is happening? We're looking at behaviors. What is going on? What's the response behaviorally? The feelings or emotions. Now, sometimes those may be expressed directly, and sometimes those may be implied. When they're implied, they're a little bit harder to get at because we might be looking at things like facial expressions or behaviors. So it might be useful to actually ask a question. Are you feeling A, B, and C? I've noticed your head's down. Does that mean that you're feeling sad right now? And the fourth area in terms of listening to a speaker is listening to their thoughts, their perceptions, their cognitions. So while we're doing this, the listener's job is just to listen, not to add, not to debate details, not to debate whether things are accurate or inaccurate, just trying to understand. Just basically flipping the iMessage in reverse, and when it's their turn, stating you feel such and such because such and such is happening in your perception, and the future you would like such and such to happen. One of the useful things that I try and teach couples is how to validate what they can from the other person. Oh, such and such makes sense. So now I understand why you're feeling sad. You thought A, B, and C. If there's any part of what the other person's saying that can be validated, that brings a sense of closeness that helps understanding. Keep in mind that practice makes perfect. It takes time doing these iMessages for them to feel natural and normal. John Gottman, whose name I mentioned early on today, really is a guru of marriage counseling. He talks about when we're doing these exercises, make sure we're taking turns back and forth. Show genuine interest. So we're talking about not just the verbals, but the nonverbals. Is the body language really showing that you're trying to hear each other out? Don't give unsolicited advice. Communicate understanding. When you're able to validate, like I said, take your partner's side. Instead of one of you against the other, communicate a we against others attitude. So look at the problem as outside yourself and both of you facing the problem and looking, what are we going to do from here? Show affection even while you're problem solving. Sit close. Hold hands. I remember one couple that I've talked to in the past that for them, in order to de-escalate conflicts, as silly as it sounds, they would lay their head on each other's forehead. And it was really hard to argue when they did that. They felt that that kind of broke the ice and made them start to problem solve better. When we talk about perspective taking, we talk about how there's something valid in each person's perspective. I don't know if you've ever heard the story of the wise men and the elephant, but there's a story where several blind men are trying to figure out what an elephant is. One touches a tusk and says, oh, he's so sharp. He's very pointy and sharp. Another touches a leg and says, wow, this is a high wall. Another touches a side. Another touches a tail and says, oh, it's like a rope. So they're each touching different parts of the elephant, but because they're only touching one part, they believe that's their reality. This is just like in couples relationship. We each have a different part of the perspective. So the key is looking at how can we combine all the different roles and perspectives to try and make a whole, and then look at developing that we against the problem or the concerns attitude. So we'll start with the iMessage, and then we move to what I call the communication game. We try to get three yeses in terms of understanding each of three portions of what the other person's saying. So are you feeling blank? If we say, oh, I think you're feeling sad, and they say, no, I'm not sad, give them a chance to clarify. Okay, well, help me understand how it is you're feeling if it's not sad. I remember one couple where they had been separated for a while, but were working towards moving back in together, and he tried to paraphrase and said, oh, so you're feeling sad now. And she got quite angry and said, sad? I'm absolutely devastated. You said you were going to move back in, and it's been a year now, and I'm not sure it's ever going to happen. So it's useful to go back and hear, on a continuum of sadness to absolute despair where the person might be. So what are they feeling? You're feeling such and such because, hear why they're feeling that and what they'd like in the future. So instead of the listener responding with his or her own perceptions, we want to make sure first they've heard what the other person says. The communication game is useful because it helps to correct false assumptions. It demonstrates that both parties are worthy of being respected and heard. It's immediate. It's honest. It can be done in a supportive way. And it's specific. So one of the things that we do is try to cultivate empathy. When someone's sharing their experience, their feelings and thoughts, and what they'd like to happen, we're listening for what they hope for. What do they believe actually happen versus what they desire to happen? What do they really want from here? So those are things that we're looking at. So let's do some examples to try and make sure we understand what listening and perspective taking is all about. Your spouse tells you he feels overwhelmed trying to juggle tasks at work and home. So let's see, if I'm trying to come up with a message to summarize that. So you're feeling overwhelmed. Are you feeling overwhelmed because you feel like you're spread too thin? You're doing stuff at work and home and seems like there's no break time or rest in between all of it. Now the thing I'm not hearing in this example is what he would like to do instead. So I might actually say that. So I hear how overwhelmed you are. I hear how you're doing so many things at work and home and there's not a break. But I'm not sure what would be most helpful to you at this point. Can you help me understand that? That helps fill in this last part and in the future I'd like. Because otherwise my temptation as a listener might be to jump in and problem solve. So I might say, oh, let's go out and have a fun day instead. And the speaker might say, well, shoot, that's one fun day, but all the rest of the days I still have to juggle work and home. So that's why it's good to hear from the speaker's perspective what it is that they're hoping for. Let's look at the second example. Your partner brags that she would like to have a little more time weekly. Or brings up, I'm sorry, not brags. Brings up that she would like to have a little more time weekly. I'm not sure how you're feeling without having that me time. Can you help me understand? And they might say, just drained. Okay, you're feeling drained because you feel like there's no time just for self-care. Right, right. And you want us to try and come up with a way in our schedule where maybe I can help watch the kids or do something else so that you have some time. Yeah. What about this last one? Your partner thinks the two of you need to live apart as the fighting has escalated lately. So I'm not sure what the feeling is yet. I might try to ask some feelings, or I might directly just ask the person who's talking. So I hear that you want us to start living apart. You feel like we're fighting too much. I'm not sure how that's affecting you, though. What are you feeling when the fighting gets to this point? And then the speaker can clarify and say, you know, I'm just feeling discouraged about the future of our relationship. We do have a few more examples here on the next PowerPoint, so let's go through those. We have you and your fiancé. We're talking daily with each other. Now you haven't heard anything for 3 days. I might feel worried. The thoughts might be going through my mind about a lot of different things, so it would be pretty important to check in about that. So you haven't heard from your fiancé in 3 days, and you're not sure what that means. How is that affecting you? Can you help me understand how that's affecting you? what it is you're feeling or what it is that you're wanting at this point. Because the speaker may have some ideas. They might think of, I'm not sure I want to be in the relationship. They might think, oh gosh, I'm worried about my fiance, or I want to go ahead and call the fiance and see what's happening. So we want to try and understand where the speaker's coming from. What about this next one? You've dated someone for 7 years. It's feeling like you're having less and less in common. Both of you agree it's not been the same. And you're different people than when you first got to know each other. So I might say, you're feeling concerned about the future of our relationship. We've been together 7 years, so we've had quite a history. We've been through a lot of ups and downs. But over time, we've also discovered what we believe in and the type of people we are. I'm not sure what you're thinking about in terms of this relationship from here. So it's really important to build empathy, like I said. Understand those three parts of the communication exercise. Another exercise that's interesting is looking at sitting back to back with your partner without the distraction of the nonverbals. So you're not seeing each other, you're not talking. Then once it's quiet, you decide who's going to be the speaker and who's going to be the listener. And it helps you to really pay attention to what the other person's saying. If you need to, you can even draw out, if you have a notepad, what they're saying. Keep in mind, when people are sharing their concerns and feelings, usually it's not just one thing they're saying, but there's a variety of different feelings that tend to co-occur. Now, we've talked about some of the things that are thought errors. John Gottman talks about what he calls the four horsemen. And these are especially things that we need to pay attention to and we want to avoid. I would encourage each person in the partnership or the couple that you're looking at to look through which of these they might do and how we can change those. All of the four horsemen I'm going to explain now are a problem because they communicate disrespect. So the person on the receiving end experiences them as disrespect. Maybe they're a pattern that's been used over and over, but what it communicates to the other is disrespect. So the first of the four horsemen is criticism. When we focus on our partner's flaws or shortcomings, that really just breeds destruction in the relationship because they feel like, well, I can't do anything right. They feel like it's not their behavior that's a problem or something to be changed, but it's actually them as a person that's wrong. The second of the four horsemen we want to avoid is defensiveness, denying things or counterattacking. The third one we want to avoid is contempt or disgust, acting like we're more superior and our partner's inferior. And the last one is stonewalling or withdrawing emotionally. Some other things that contribute to the destructive patterns of communication are when we escalate a topic, when we keep it going, when it really needs to stop and we need to create a pause, invalidating or minimizing the other person's feelings, using absolutes, like we talked about with the thought errors, the all or nothing types of things, negative interpretations, assuming the worst, or refusing to be engaged in the immediate topic. In terms of how do I engage from here, Cook talks about a pattern using a pattern called stop, drop, and swap. So stop, we're creating a pause. We're interrupting being in reaction mode. Drop, we're dropping our own agendas. Instead of each of us in the partnership or couple going on and on and on, we're just focused on each other. And swap, we're talking to each other honestly. One of the things we're going to look at now is how to, in addition to empathy, explore behavior change. So we'll start with the I message, share our goals, and then ask for a request. I find that one of the best ways of approaching behavior requests is to use the formula, would you be willing to? So let's look at a few examples here. I'm worried about you drinking alone with the neighbor woman and telling her about our problems. I think that can create a situation which makes it more likely for an affair to happen again. Is there something we could say at this point that would be a behavior request? I might say, would you be willing to hang out with the neighbors when we're both there together? Would you be willing for us to agree to not talk one-on-one with the opposite sex when we're not there? Would you be willing to not talk with her unless we have a few other people present? Let's look at the next example. I am concerned when time passes and I do not get a phone call about where you are. I don't know what's happening then. Is there a behavior request we could make? I might say, in the future, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to give me a quick call. Or if you don't have time to give a call, if you'd be willing to just do a text. Like, busy, 10 minutes. Or something that would say, I'll call you in 10 minutes, I'm tied up right now. Or traffic. Or caught at work. Half hour. Something that would just cue me in. So when we talk about behavior requests, we talk about what's a desired behavior, and then we're specific about what the time frame is, what it would look like. So doing this behavior would look like A, B, and C. I would feel supported in this goal if you would, such and such. And the way we'll evaluate this is such and such. So making behavior requests is really important. And keep in mind, they can always be modified. That's something we want to highlight with our clients. We have to try something to get a starting point, but we can always modify. Another skill that's useful to teach our couples is a skill of allowing room for no. No can be a healthy word. No is just as important as yes, because we're creating space to say no without guilt. We're creating practices for saying no for the non-important things, and then over time, moving to saying no or wait for things that might be more important. When we learn how to say no in a healthy way, it creates more meaning to our yeses. So we'll talk about the types of no in a little bit. I find that sometimes people have a hard time saying no because they're worried about the reaction of the other person. They're worried that if I say no, that person won't like me, they won't approve of me, it'll change the relationship. But one of the things that I'll do with them to start, if no is difficult, is to create a useful pause. For example, there was a lady that I used to counsel who was helpful to everyone. She was used to immediately just diving in and helping anyone who needed anything. But what happened over time, she was getting worn out. And it was hard for her to communicate to people, I'm not able to help you. So what she would do when they would call and say, I need to hurry up and get to the grocery store by the end of today or I won't have milk. Oh, I need to get to this appointment and I don't have a ride. As she would paraphrase what they're saying, I hear that you're up against a time crunch and you're needing help right now. Then she would create a helpful, useful wait or a pause in there. Something like, I have a few things I have to attend to now and I'll be able to call you back within 15 minutes to see how my schedule's shaping up. That way, Even if she intends to help them, it is training those people that are calling her that she's not automatically just going to dive in and do everything. If they have other resources, it's also teaching them that they have options, not just her. And it's teaching her that no and boundaries are not a bad thing. One of the things that I might do with people is looking at evaluating how they are with attending, focusing, and listening. There are some actual questions or a listening assessment of sorts we can do. People can look at questions like, when someone's talking, do I really listen to them or do I tune them out when it's something I don't want to hear? Do I concentrate on superficial things like the speaker's appearance or their tone of voice rather than the actual content of things? Do I assume rather than actually check in with the person? Do I shut them out when I disagree with them? Do I listen for facts or do I listen for the big picture? Do I get the whole idea of what they're saying before I jump back in? Am I focusing just on what the speaker's saying or am I looking at everything else around me and getting distracted? Do I take notes if I need to about what's said to make sure I'm focusing and remembering? Am I distracted by outside things and noises, or am I focused on the speaker? Instead of making assumptions, do I take each interaction with the other person as something new and actually try to listen and hear? Am I slouching, fidgeting, or doing things that would give the impression that I'm not trying to pay attention? Am I looking at them? Are my nonverbals showing that I'm focused on them? Am I interrupting or am I staying quiet and really trying to hear what they're saying? So there's actual ways to practice listening. Practice listening and attending. Don't guess what the person's saying ahead of time. Focus on their message rather than their looks, their tone of voice, their accent, their clothing. Learn to hear differing points of view. This is something I'll even have couples practice on non-essential issues in their marriage. So, for example, if they're watching a TV show together, I might say, you know what? During the commercial, why don't you share what you think about that commercial, about that product, and just learn how to hear each other's point of view. Like I said, practice makes perfect. It's not a natural skill. It's not always an easy skill. So it's something that they could do, and the more they do, the better they'll get at that. Be prepared to listen by reviewing what they're saying, by reviewing what's happened already, by seeing if there's any changes. Choose your seating to show that you're listening and paying attention. Have a notepad if you need to record thoughts or reactions to things. Check in. And like I said, practice. And then we want to make sure our nonverbals, our body language, which also gives a huge piece of the message, is supporting that we're listening as well. One of the neat things that I learned in terms of a seminar I attended in the past is how men and women communicate differently. Now, we probably all have observed that to this point, but this neuropsychologist who was teaching the seminar actually gave some suggestions about communicating with men. She said we should start with the end result of the communication. So instead of, when we communicate with a woman, just going on and on about the story, like, how was your day? Well, this happened, then I ran into her, then that happened, and I felt this and this. Start with the end result because it'll tell the man what role you want him to be in. Men usually, the way they're wired, is to be problem solvers, to try and be coming up with a solution. And that may or may not be the role that the speaker wants them in. So initially, when I say start with the end result, we start with a statement when we're talking with a man about the role expectation. As I share about how my day is, I just need support. I need you to sit next to me and listen and hug me because I really had a rough day. Or, I need understanding. I'm facing a difficult decision because I ran into someone that I knew years ago and now I'm having to reevaluate things. Can you just try and understand as I tell you what I'm going through? Some people might actually need agreement, and some people need problem solving. It's also important to operationalize each of these. What does support look like? What does problem solving look like? So again, we might have different ideas of that. For men, oftentimes, support is giving a solution. So it might be useful for the person talking to the man to actually say, as I need support, I need you to sit next to me and really be quiet and just hear what I'm feeling right now. They actually find that when we do that approach, that the man's brain turns on in those areas that are respective to the role that we've asked them to do. So it's quite interesting. One of the other things I wanted to talk about, when we're talking about operational definitions, a lot of times couples will use similar words like love, trust, communication, togetherness, but they'll mean something different for each of them. In the literature, they talk about what's called the love languages. We don't all measure love the same. Some people, love is tell me something romantic. Tell me compliments and what you like about me and what you want more of in the relationship. Other people, love means quality time. Some people, it's gift giving. Others, it's do something to help, like help around the house. Or still others, it might be physical touch. One of the useful things is finding out what means love to your partner. Oftentimes, the errors we make is we try to love our partner the way we'd want to be loved. And what the Love Languages books highlight is that if we really want to build effective communication, effective intimacy and closeness, it's important to love the other as he or she interprets love. Now we're going to talk a little bit about some cognitive behavioral approaches that can improve communication for a couple. One of them, I use the phrase, watch where you put your butts. So initially, we oftentimes tell us stuff that actually makes things worse. Things like, yeah, I know that we've been together for 3 years in our relationship, but man, we fight an awful lot lately. So that person, after the word but, is focusing on the negativity, on things that are not going well, and they're feeling more stuck. So what we want to do is start with realistic statement about what we're feeling, about what our concern is, but end up with a rational, realistic statement after we've done those cognitive debating skills. So we're learning to tell ourselves the whole truth. Like I said, in every statement, usually there's a positive, there's some truth, but then there's also some lie. Let's look at some examples here. It feels like everyone's eyes are on me. They can tell how bad I look. I just can't keep this up as a single parent after my ex left. I'm emotionally drowning and now I have to handle this. So let's try and use that statement of watch where you put your butts. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling like everybody's eyes are on me. I'm just feeling smothered by all these different tasks that I'm juggling as a single parent. But I'm only one person and I can do my best at what's ahead of me. So you see how that person focused on the positive after the word but. They put things in perspective. And so in the long run, what we're going to do is we're going to take a sheet of paper and we're going to write down all the positive things after the word but. I am doing all I can do. I am being helpful. As a single parent, I'm juggling a lot and trying my best. Let's look at this next scenario here. My opinions don't mean anything to my spouse. He keeps watching TV and looking away. Though he nods his head, he really could care less about what I'm saying. He rarely does what I suggest. So I might say I feel alone. I feel concerned that we're not as much of a team as we've been in the past. But he did help me with things earlier today. But if I bring up what I need, oftentimes he will help. Let's look at the next one. My partner is quiet today. I know it's just a matter of time before he leaves, like everyone else in my life. There's some real negative schemas there that over time have been developed. This reminds me of what we talked about earlier today about what's the story that we tell ourselves. So this person's telling themselves a story that if my partner's quiet, it must mean that they've checked out of the relationship. I might say, I feel worried that there may be things we need to deal with in our relationship. But just because I feel that doesn't mean that our relationship is going to always end. But there are ways we can deal with things. But we can have a discussion. And we have been together for 5 years already. So when I felt that in the past, it hasn't always been accurate. Let's look at this next example of telling yourself the whole truth. Nothing good ever happens to me. At every bend, there's only negative things. I know that just because this relationship seems okay now, my relationships never last. So again, this person has global negative thoughts. Let's look at a way they could change that. I worry about the patterns of the past because of all I've been through. But there are some things going well right now. Maybe I can talk with my partner about what's going well and we can problem solve how we can continue to increase the parts that are going well. Let's look at the last one. I must be good, strong, and perfect to be happy with myself in life. So on that one, they could say, I've always tried to do my best and go overboard on things, but that's all I can do is my best. Another topic that we want to look at in terms of working with couples is cultivating a sense of oneness. If you recall a little bit ago, I mentioned that in John Gottman's literature, he talks about cultivating a sense of we, dreaming together. So one of the useful exercises with some couples, depending what they're coming in for, is to help them look at the future, to develop a future orientation, but especially a future orientation together if we're trying to rekindle the intimacy. So they could complete sentences like, I've always wanted such and such. When I was a child, I thought of blank. If we had the time or money, I would love for us to such and such. What happens is we can use the empathy techniques that we talked about in the paraphrasing to hear what they're wanting. The key with this is to not debate or correct about how irrational we think that dream might be. We might think, oh my gosh, we don't have the money for that, or why would they want to do that? They're not talented in that area. But we're just using this as an example to hear how this person thinks and dreams, and we're looking at concrete behavioral terms. So someone might say, I want to develop this new business, and the other person's thinking, that's not going to work. What the second person's supposed to do is just show interest in the dream by asking questions, like what's important about this dream? What's the most important part? Is there a story behind the dream? How this became something important to you? Tell me about that story. Is there something from your life and your history that relates to this? What are the feelings you have about this and the wishes from here? You might want to, as you're empathizing, listen to if there's beliefs or values that the person might have that are tied to this dream. Or if there's any fears they have if the dream isn't honored. And then talk with the couple about, are there small ways that they could pursue the dream? So this gets back to setting behavioral goals. We talked about earlier when we set goals, or when we're making behavioral requests, we ask, would you be willing to? When we're talking about behavioral goals, we want them to be concrete and specific, things that we can measure, things that are achievable. Is it something that that person would be able to do? We don't want them to have a sense of defeat if they can't do it. And with accountability for following up. Find out what it is the person needs to be able to achieve those goals. So we're talking from our point of view. We're describing the desired behavior. Ask if they're willing to do it. And then share the time frame or how that would look. Let's look at a few examples here of how we might improve something that's general and not too good and make it more effective in terms of goal setting. The dishes and household chores are never done around here. The apartment looks like a pigsty. So I might say, I'm feeling overwhelmed about all the things that need to be cleaned around here, especially the dishes. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to get the dirty dishes and put them in the sink and then I can be washing them off. So something specific. What about the second example? We just don't do things together. It's like we're from two different worlds anymore. So it sounds to me like these people's goal would be time together. I might say, you know, when I went into this marriage, I was thinking about all the times that we spent together when we were single and the activities we did. And I know we have a lot more responsibilities now. But I'm wondering if we can one day a week just take a block of 3 hours and go for a ride and talk about how things are going or go to the park like we used to. Let's look at a third example. At least John and Mary make time for dates. Between their schedules, what do we have anymore? I might say something like, time with you is very important to me. I know our schedules are oftentimes different, and it can be difficult for us to even talk sometimes. I'm wondering if we can come up with a way where we can add something in there weekly. Could we even have one morning where maybe you wake up a little early, or I come home from work a little bit, you know, earlier than usual, and we end up having some time together. Let's look at the fourth example. As a couple's looking at pictures, one of them says, I remember when we used to be able to talk about anything. So I think I would say, I'm wondering if on Friday nights when the kids are at the babysitter's, we can bring up some of the most important things that we want to talk and problem solve about. Maybe through the week we can create a list and prioritize them, and we can just cuddle in each other's arms and have a warm coffee and sit and talk through these things. It would feel like old times, and it would feel like we're a couple and we're solving these things again. And let's look at the last one. Kathy's over here all the time. She doesn't have a life of her own. I might say, I know how important your friendship with Kathy is and your time with her, but I'm also feeling like our time as a couple is jeopardized. I'm wondering if we can maybe limit some of the time with her so that it doesn't cut into our time together. And then I would describe what the together time looks like. Now, I would encourage you to go to the website, www.rolpc.org, and watch the brief video on making behavior requests so you could see an example of what that looks like. As you're doing this, there's other exercises that you can give couples. You can have them each make a list of the things that pleases their partner, whether that's closeness, physical intimacy, compliments, doing considerate acts, helping with childcare, or making decisions, and then having them rate those from 1 to 3 in terms of how important they are. What that can do is when they trade those lists with their partner, it gives their partner basically a cheat sheet of the things that are most important to them that they would like help on, that they would like to feel more close, to feel more loved. So after we look at the video on making behavior requests, we're going to come back and we're going to continue on the nonverbal communication builder.